Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Horror Weekly. ISS the movie plus group versus group horror movies. So I'm going to try to do something this podcast isn't exactly built for. If it comes out a little jagged, I beg your patience. I know ISS isn't a horror movie per se. It's a sci-fi thriller. I do put it in the category of movies that I think horror fans would be interested in. But the reason I'm doing this at all is the movie blew my expectations away with some caveats. I really enjoyed seeing it in a theater, and I'm going to try to spread the gospel of ISS as a almost minor masterpiece before it's out of theaters, because I think some people who don't think they're going to enjoy it really will. Which brings us to the thing this podcast isn't built for. First of all, I didn't poll the fans about this one, although I did ask about group versus group horror in the VIP subscriber group. I didn't want to poll the page because it's not a horror movie and we're called Horror Weekly and I try to be sparing of that. So I'm just going to talk through the movie spoiler free at first. And then I'm going to get into spoilers with a warning. And then we're also going to talk about what I'm calling group versus group horror, because in ISS, it's Americans versus Russians, at least theoretically. There are plot twists. But because a lot of the tension of this movie came from one group facing off against another group, it set me thinking about horror movies where there are group versus group kind of battles or fights to the death. And there's a lot less of them than I would have thought. I mean, there's tons of them, but a lot of the movies that I kind of, so for example, my mind went to military horror right away because a lot of the characters in ISS have a military background. A military horror movie I like very much, although it's incredibly flawed, is Michael Mann's The Keep. But that's really like Nazis versus one master vampire. It's not like a true group versus group battle. And we'll get into it. I want to start with ISS. But later in the episode, I'm going to break down both the subscriber group's favorite horror movies that feature group versus group battles, and then a few of my own with a couple surprises, I believe, will be in there. So ISS, which stands for International Space Station, is out in theaters as I'm recording this in the end of January 2024. It's directed by Gabriella Cowperthwaite, who, this blew my mind when I discovered it, has directed some movies, but the only one I was familiar with is the documentary Blackfish, the movie that stems from the inception, I believe, of Netflix's streaming era. I feel like there was a time when there were not very many movies available on Netflix, and there Blackfish was enticing everyone with its interesting-looking thumbnail. And that documentary became kind of a cultural phenomenon for a minute back then. Everyone was talking about Shamu and SeaWorld, etc., right after that movie dropped. And the movie actually made a difference in the world, which is odd to go from that to this movie, although maybe not so much as we get into it. You'll see there are some themes that are really interesting, knowing what this filmmaker's background. Speaking of movies that made a difference in the world, as a quick aside, there is a post running on the Horror Weekly Facebook page right now celebrating that this is the anniversary of the release of Final Destination 2, released on January 31st, 2003. And the caption to the post said, "There are very few horror movies that change people's behaviors in real life, the way Psycho made people stop showering for a while, or the way Jaws made people stop swimming, or going to the beach for a while, or maybe ever, judging from some of the comments under the post, reckoning up the trauma of growing up with Jaws. And it got really fun because there's a lot of comments celebrating Final Destination 2 and how a lot of people, it's their favorite in the series, and how they are scared of log trucks forever, rightfully so, after being scarred by the movie. But then there was a kind of sub-discussion going on, taking up my challenge of there aren't a lot of horror movies that change people's behaviors, and then starting to list how some other horror movies made other changes in people's behaviors. Samantha Gansey, who's a subscriber, thank you so much for the support, Samantha, commented, "The first time I saw Candyman, I made my dad take the mirror off the dresser in my bedroom for months. It made me weary of bathroom sinks and street drains for life. And Lord knows, I'll never stick my hand in a garbage disposal." Bianca Adams said, "Oh yeah, all the Final Destination movies contributed to many of the things I will and won't do, especially driving high in trucks, water bottles loose in the car, or get on roller coaster rides. I'm good on all that shit, Chief." Miranda Chermuka said, "Yep. And I always look in my backseat before getting into my car, thanks to Urban Legend." There were a lot of people who have sworn off tanning beds forever after Final Destination 3. But there was one movie that got so many mentions for ruining a certain kind of activity for people. And just try to guess it while I'm talking. I'll do a brief pause. What really great horror movie, very, very well known. As a matter of fact, the director of that movie is going to come up later in our group versus group horror discussion. But just, I did not expect this movie to have been so pivotal on people's behavior. So someone mentioned arachnophobia. They don't close their eyes in the bathroom. That makes sense. Okay, so the movie that I was talking about is The Descent, which had so many people saying The Descent ruined caving for me. The Descent like made me nervous of a bunch of claustrophobia comments. So Hank, thank you to everyone who's commenting over on that post and making it, the discussion really fun. Okay, so ISS. There are only 6 people in this cast. There's not even like a super AI computer. There's no other like thing at all. And like I said, it's not a horror movie, but it is like along the Skynet kind of from the Terminator movies, that kind of angle into being of interest to horror fans. Definitely horrible things happen in this movie, both on a mass scale and a small. The cast is fantastic in this movie. Ariana DeBose is basically the main character. Her name is Kira. And then rounding out the American characters, we have Chris Messina, who's playing Gordon, and John Gallagher Jr., of 10 Cloverfield Lane fame, playing Christian. And then the 3 Russian scientists, there's Masha Mashkova, who's playing Nika. Her and Ariana are my favorite characters in the movie. Well, no, they're actually this one, Pilu Adzak, I can't say his name properly. He plays Alexei, and you'll know him as Euron Greyjoy from Game of Thrones. And then Costa Ronan playing Nicholas. So the character, Euron Greyjoy, we'll just call him for the purpose of this podcast. Nika and Kira are my favorite characters, although they're all really good in their own way. And I should mention, there's one female Russian cosmonaut, and then the 2 men are brothers. So the movie starts with Kira, who's a former Marine, arriving at the International Space Station, greeting her teammates, and then kind of like getting the orientation tour, being shown like her workstation, everyone else's, where she sleeps, which is, I did not know this about the International Space Station, although it seems pretty obvious, but the sleeping arrangements are horrible. Apparently they're sleeping upright. As a matter of fact, the guy from 10 Cloverfield Lane, Christian, sleeps with his eyes open in his weird little like stand-up closet that you have to sleep in. If I was across from him like Kira is, and I was looking across there and he was just snoring away with his eyes open, I'd have nightmares for weeks. I kind of hate that idea. You can sleep strapped into like Velcro to the wall in a bag, or you can sleep free floating in zero gravity, which sounds amazing to try, but I feel like I wouldn't sleep for my entire tour on the ISS if I was an astronaut. And I'll just tell you right from the jump, this movie's only like 90 minutes or so. It's very tight. There's almost no filler, which I super appreciate. It knows exactly what it is. It's not trying to be 2001 A Space Odyssey. It's a straight up thriller in a confined space with like remarkable views. We'll get to that. But it's not trying to do a whole bunch of profound things. Whatever messages it contains, it's trying to fit like little kernels of those messages into the action, little fortune cookie moments here and there. But it's really a quick, fun movie. So her orientation doesn't take very long. The sequence of them kind of getting to know each other, they're bonding. She brought gifts from the surface. They're exchanging kind of gifts from their trips up and down or things they have stashed. A little alcohol, a little gift from the little like a keychain with a strap gift from like, I don't know, the NASA gift shop or whatever. They get into a roundabout argument about politics for a second, and then it's quickly said that they don't talk politics up here. The little tension flares up and then it goes away. There's a little tension over a song that's playing, Winds of Change, which is a really interesting discussion. And we know this is a thriller going into it. So the tension's already kind of like riding on your shoulders as a viewer, because you know this movie's probably headed in some bad directions. But these little sparks that could flare up into forest fires, but the brush fires, but like go out really quickly of tension, is really an interesting way to kick off the movie. And you can tell a couple things right away. One is everyone here genuinely likes and respects each other, which is not a surprise. I mean, astronauts go through a battery of psychological tests. You know going into it that you're going to be living in a very close quarters for a very long time with no break with other people, which sounds like fucking hell to me, but they're built for it. And they try to avoid things that'll like really trigger each other, because naturally if you annoy the hell out of someone and you're going to spend the next 120 days no further than a football field away from them at most, maybe not the best idea emotionally for you or the other person. So they're doing good as the movie starts. Then we get taken to this amazing moment where they take Kira, the newcomer, to the best view on the station, which is, I think they call it the cupola. It's just like a I think it's only like a 180 kind of like window view of space and Earth. And it's like the most unobstructed view without the arms of the station or anything else in the way of kind of their area of space and a vantage point that looks down on Earth. And it's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And the astronauts are curious to see Kira's reaction because of something they call the overview effect. The overview effect is like almost a spiritual kind of moment that some astronauts have when they look down at Earth, and they're taken in by the beauty of it, but also by the fact that when you look at the entire planet in just one view, there's no borders, there's no divisions, there's no kind of ugliness. You're just seeing like a gorgeous blue, green expanse. And it's like you can idealize it sort of. It's like the best of what Earth could be if everyone just kind of like got along or whatever. And also like how insignificant like little problems are, like, you know, like the long red light you sit in, you know, on your commute or whatever, seems really fucking far away when you're on the International Space Station. And all the view is spectacular. I looked it up. The International Space Station's only 255 miles above Earth, which is less than I would have expected. It's traveling at almost 18,000 miles per hour. So that means it orbits the entire Earth every 90 minutes. So it's both lower than I expected and way faster than I expected. But anyway, Kira does not seem to have the overview effect. She thinks it's beautiful. She's impressed by the view, but she's clearly not spiritually rocked by it. And all the other astronauts seem kind of vaguely disappointed. And we never find out if any of them had this effect. I suspect none of them did, based on their actions in the rest of the movie. And it's interesting. It's like urban legend, like a Candyman, like Bloody Mary kind of thing. Like everyone hears about it, like, oh, the overview effect. And then astronaut after astronaut comes up to the ISS and they all go in, load into the cupola and look at the view and then don't have it. Right. So this goes on for a little bit, a very short part of the movie, appropriately small part. And then as Kira's kind of settling in and getting her work done, and by the way, she's doing some kind of experimentation on mice, which becomes really important later, because the very first ominous moment, not conversationally, that happens during the politics part, but I think sequentially this even comes before that conversation. So the first ominous thing that happens is when she's setting up her mice in her workstation and the mice are freaking out, floating around in their cage in zero gravity for the first time. She runs into Euron Greyjoy and he's setting up his station and he seems a little put off that she put some of her stuff over on his side, even though she's clearly new and wouldn't know. And he's got an ominous feel to him. And then he's really kind of cold to her. She walks away and says, like, almost sarcastically, well, it was nice to meet you. And then he kind of drifts over to her side of her workstation and looks at her mice. And he told her that mice on the station don't do well, that it doesn't end well for them. She loves her mice. She talks to them. She's giving them names. Like, so she's really nonplussed to hear this information that her mice are going to come to horrible ends. And then when she leaves, he drifts over to her side and like ominously reaches into the cage and stares at the mice like he's going to fuck with them. So you don't know what's going on there, but already you're like, okay, something weird's happening here. Then she gets to work, and while she's working, she notices that there are weird, freaky, huge, scary-looking flashes happening down on Earth that are clearly some kind of, like, nuclear exchange or a series of accidents, or they don't know what's going on, but it's bad. And then they kind of go away, but the communications go down immediately from Earth to the ISS, and the power goes out and flicks on, like weird things happen. So something very drastic has clearly happened. And then we get into one of the best sequences of the movie, where as they're running around the station trying to figure out if everything's all right, is it damaged, are they going to die, and then try to restore communications, figure out what the hell is going on. A secret communication comes in to the Americans on this very secret looking box that like flashes a red emergency light, like incoming transmission. And it tells the astronauts, so it's Gordon, who seems to be the senior American astronaut here. It tells him that there has been a military conflict initiated between America and Russia, and that the American astronauts are to take control of the ISS by any means necessary. It's their duty as American personnel, or in some of their cases as American military personnel, to take the ISS for its strategic importance, that it's critical to do. And what's so good about this is this poor guy who's working with people that he really respects, and we're about to find out, one of which he's in love with, the Russian cosmonaut, Nika. So this is the worst news possible. And as a viewer, you're immediately wondering, are they even going to try to do it? Because they seem they're all getting along so well. For the most part, it seems like unlikely that even with this message that they would do it. So you're immediately on edge, like, but this poor guy's trying to read the message, not show the other people he's reading the message, because the message says this is confidential, don't distribute this information to anyone else, clearly not to the Russians. And he's already kind of, he feels like he's betraying them by reading it and not telling them about it, but he doesn't know what to do with it. His information is so big that he doesn't know what to do with it right away, so he just kind of closes his laptop. The Russians clearly get the same message in Russian, even though we don't see it and can't read it. We do see that their secret message machine goes off as well. And now we're in precisely the situation all the people in the two boats in the Dark Knight were in, each with the trigger to blow the other one's boat up before midnight, right? Like, the problem here is you don't feel like you want to blow up their boat. But the threat is, what if they cave and blow up your boats? You don't want to blow up their boat, but maybe you have to blow up their boat out of self-defense. That's the trap. And sure, like, the Americans may not want to do this to the Russians, but what if the Russians do it and strike first? Then you're down the initiative, right? The best case would be everyone openly communicating to each other and everyone deciding to completely disregard these communications, but they do not do that. Now everyone's got secrets. So it's going to be pretty much impossible to talk about anything else along the plot without spoilers. So let me just tell you what I loved about this movie here. Then we'll get into the few details of the ending with a warning, and then we'll talk about some horror movie battles. So I was really surprised by how authentic they made the ISS interiors feel. It was really cool to see. I didn't think there'd be anything new. I've read and seen a lot of space stuff I'm really interested in. I'm obsessed with the Apollo missions. So I didn't think anything, not how they function in their day-to-day stuff would be a surprise, but just visually, you're not going to top 2001. There's excellent movies like the Sam Rockwell Moon or, a bunch of others that, so you don't feel like visually there's going to be anything new here, but they made it look really authentic. The ISS did, and they made it so you felt like they were both trapped in a small space, but had a large enough space where it could be interesting where people could hide or ambush each other. And one of my favorite things of the movie is the gradual decimation of Earth by increasing nuclear exchanges, and how the color of the Earth going from that beautiful green blue to an angry red, orange flares, just kind of reflected off all of the silvery glass steel surfaces of the space station. So the space station itself started to look red and worse and like scarier and scarier as the Earth was getting scary looking. And so the situations were mirroring each other as the Earth was getting more and more violent. Clearly some bad things were happening down there and getting worse really quickly. That was the same thing that was happening inside the space station with the characters with each other. So visually, it was really setting the tone for what they were going through emotionally and psychologically and as they worked out the plot. And there's a really convincing and haunting moment where Gordon goes on a spacewalk to repair an antenna, and he's tethered to the outside of the spacecraft or the space station, and it's scary enough. Like, they make it feel really intimidating, because although moonwalks seem like they're kind of like, you know, routine now. It's clearly not something you want to do when the space station is acting weird with power outages and hell is getting unleashed on Earth and you have no preparation time. Like you do, it's an emergency. You have to just go out and do it. There's nothing that scientists or astronauts like more than preparation. As anyone who's seen like Apollo 13 will know, they drill the hell out of everything. And this is like a clearly improvised kind of moment. So it's very tense. And you would think the scariest thing about this moonwalk is something bad going to happen to the character? How scary is it is to just be out in space where if you get untethered, you just drift away to like take, I don't know, days till your suit runs out of oxygen or whatever to die, just floating out there with nothing, no hope. You would think that that would be the scariest thing about it. But the visual of the Earth destroying itself is so frightening that the scariest moment of the moonwalk isn't the actual walk. It's something the character Gordon says. He's on the comms with Kira, and they're talking through like the steps of how to get to the antenna. Have you checked the pressure on your suit, et cetera, et cetera. And then he goes really quiet and she goes, Gordon, are you there? Gordon, are you there? And he's like, Kira, I want you to do me a favor. And she goes, sure, anything. What? He goes, keep everyone away from the windows. And it was my favorite line of dialogue in the film because he looked down at Earth and he was so shaken by the sight of it that he wanted to spare everybody else that demoralizing terror. And it's not often you get that in a horror movie. And this is a horror podcast, so I'm, you know, reviewing this from a horror framework, even though it's clearly not a horror movie. But in horror movies, most often what's happening is you're dealing with a character who's scared for themselves. They're panicking for themselves. They're trying to get away from something or get out of some terrible situation for themselves. In this moment, he's less scared for himself and more scared for everybody else. And that's a really interesting psychological effect that I liked a lot and the movie did more than once. I loved a lot of the combinatorics of the characters where it's not going to break down to a simple 3v3 situation. There are going to be sub-alliances between blocks of the characters. When you're dealing with only six, you feel like there's no way you can keep that interesting enough for a full-length movie, but they do. I think the biggest flaw of the movie is that it telegraphs a lot of what it does, what it's going to do in advance. It telegraphs something pretty obviously with the life support system. It's pretty easy to guess when certain characters seem to have been taken off the board, whether they really have or not. It's pretty easy to guess that some people are telling the truth and other people are lying. So the twists, there's one decent twist, but the other twists are pretty easy to suss out. But that didn't really harm the movie for me. It didn't feel like the kind of movie that was depending on the twist or doing like big reveal, splashy music moments alongside of voila, this is what's going on with this character or this situation. It actually felt really grounded in what we came to know about the characters emotionally. And they stayed true to themselves. And they didn't get cartoonish except for one example of cartoonish villainy. The rest of it stayed really real feeling. So I liked how grounded they stayed with the characters in the little bit of time they gave us to get to know them. And that the plot flowed from believable choices characters who are constructed the way they are in the situation they're in would make. I love that when the characters turn on each other, they turn on each other the way scientists would, at least in this movie context. It would be like taking Matt Damon's character from The Martian and turning him into a serial killer. I'm going to science the hell out of killing you. Like, they don't just straight ahead go for killing. It's subtle, and there's steps, and it's almost like an experiment. And it's all pretty logical, which is really chilling when you realize that the ultimate goal is to kill the other person. And I absolutely adored the acting, the performances. Ariana DeBose, I had no idea she's won like every award you could name. She has an Academy Award, a British Academy Award. She's got like Grammys and Emmys and all kinds of nonsense. Just a spectacular career, amazing. She was incredible in this film. There's when she first arrived, she seems like the nervous one, like a newcomer would be. But during the spacewalk scene, she's so convincing as the person trying to calm everything down over the communication system. She's really clicked into a very confident and competent mode. And it was so reassuring that when bad things happened, it felt almost blasphemous. Because she was casting such a calm spell that it just felt like you were going against the universe to like fuck up her like zen, like spreading from her like a fog of zen over everything, and that people who were unleashing mayhem in that were like just it was like it's like throwing paint at a painting to vandalize it in a museum or something. It was a really interesting effect, and it would take a great performance to bring that effect out in a movie, and she does it. She's really convincing as a fighter. She's convincing as a person who's like one step ahead of a lot of the situations that are being presented to her. Just a fantastic performance. Nika, for a lot of the movie, was my absolute favorite character. There's a straight-to-it-ness she had that the other characters lacked, and you need that one person who will get like right to the point and cut through the bullshit. And she did it in a really like believable way, but with like a lot of fire to it, right? Like you could do that and just come off as kind of like unsubtle or a bully, but she was playing this character in a way where you knew she had like oceans of emotion underneath, but she was just clicking through her own personal list of let's get this out of the way, let's get this done, let's get this known, let's get this secret out in the open. And then Alexei, Euron Greyjoy over here, he kind of steals the movie in a lot of respects, which I did not expect, because he plays this character really quiet. He's the quietest of the six characters, and in a lot of ways, the most mysterious. So let's get into spoilers here. If you want to miss the spoilers, skip 5 minutes ahead. This is going to be at exactly a 5 minute block. So we'll start with Euron Greyjoy. He's the first character you see do actually something really bad in the film. He clips the communication wire of Gordon while he's out on the spacewalk. And you can see that he has deep reservations about doing it. But also, he's kind of coded as a villain from our past knowledge of the roles he's played. He had a very sinister air to him when he was like, who knows what he was doing, poisoning Kira's mice or whatever we thought he was doing at the beginning of the movie. So when he goes for it and clips the wire, and then even more diabolically replaces the clipped wire with a dummy wire. So when the other astronauts go to investigate why the communications have broken down from inside the station to Gordon on the spacewalk, they can't find anything wrong. If he just left a wire hanging there, they would know, you know, there was sabotage. They would fix it, even though fixing it would come too late. Or so they would think. So he's a character that we see do something really bad. And it's in tandem with seeing his brother, actually attempt to murder Gordon by using this maneuverable arm on the exterior of the station to push Gordon out into space off of his tether and then away from the station to float away to die, or as they say in the movie, drown. I guess you drown in your suit, which sounds awful. So now we think doubly bad of Alexei, Euron Greyjoy, because he's blood related to the murderer, and they obviously coordinated this. And then we discover that his brother possibly duped him. I'm not sure that's true, but it feels like, but what we come to know about this character, that is true. Telling him, I just need you to disable his communications. I don't think he told him he was going to murder him while his communications were severed. This character has a really interesting journey throughout the movie. And then, you know, there are a lot of things, not a lot, but there are a few things in this movie that are too on the nose or very on the nose. I guess that's to be expected from a filmmaker who does documentaries, because life's on the nose a lot of the time, unfortunately. But there's a moment, a great reveal at the end of the film, spectacular moment that could have been corny. It could have been too on the nose. It could have been silly, but it wasn't, or at least it got me. It was really good. So when we go back at the end of the movie and pretty much we discover that everyone has either tragically been done away with or died or betrayed each other, and we're down to the final two, which is Alexei and Kira, and they're teamed up now. They're explicitly teamed up at the end. They've bridged their American-Russian gap, and now they're working together as a team to try to save the space station and or get home or both. And then they rendezvous at her workstation, and she sees that her mice, who had been floating in terror and getting sick and we think died, just from like floating around in zero gravity in their cage, just like completely out of their element and freaked out and psychologically terrorized. We look into the cage and we see that what he was doing when we cut away from him at the beginning of the movie, assuming that he was a villain, assuming he was doing something evil to like sabotage her mice experiment, he had put netting in the cage because he knew that was the only thing that was going to save her mice group's life, is to give them something to hold on to. And yeah, give them something. You need something to hold on to is the line that he says. And, you know, that's a little pat. But just seeing the mice happily running up and down this netting in zero gravity and realizing that this kind of quiet, kind of shy person that we had been misjudging and misreading as a villain of this piece, while everyone else is running around trying to kill each other, was over here saving lives, even though it's just the lives of mice. But turns out, like, I mean, you can't replace them in space, right? So like, it's going to turn out, due to the plot of this film, that these experiments can be life or death importance. And if you don't have the mice to work on, you can't do the experiments. It was a really sweetly touching moment and great visual. So I won't spoil anything else about the movie or spoil the ending, but I just wanted to talk about the character of Alexei and how that character and his building bridges, the way he builds bridges in relationships, by doing the least talking of any of them and the least scheming and the least plotting, just great, just absolutely stellar stuff. There is a heartbreaking confrontational moment between the two brothers and Nika, that is just so tense. I was sweating like watching it, and it was weird. One of the other reasons I'm doing this, talking about this movie on this podcast, is because for the first time in years, I was completely alone in the theater. Not a soul in sight. It made me sad on behalf of this movie that no one was there to see it. I wasn't there at any kind of abnormal time. I thought it was pretty bizarre that there was no one there, but like this movie deserves more of an audience than that. Now, I heard a podcast I really like, or a podcaster, review this movie and say that they were deeply in like with it or something to that effect. And I could see having that response to it. I could see thinking it's a notch above mid. I could see thinking that you wanted more meat on the bones of it. I could see thinking that you wanted more action, I guess. I could see it falling a little flat for a certain kind of viewer. That viewer, though, is not me. I loved it. I don't think it's the greatest movie ever made. It's not going to be on my list of, like, likely list of, like, the best movies. Well, maybe. Who knows? But it doesn't feel like it's going to be in, like, top five best movies of 2024 list by any means. But I don't think every movie has to be great like that. I think that one of the biggest gifts a movie like this can give me is on a day where I'm just going to see something with no expectations, not even planning to talk about it for this podcast, just like kind of intrigued because one person I respected had said in an offhanded comment that they really liked the movie. They weren't even saying raving about it. They were just said I really liked it. I was like, oh, that's a really, really smart guy. So like now I'm more interested in than I was. For a movie to just like really jump out and entertain you and exceed your expectations and feel like something that deserves to be seen in a theater, that's more than enough of a gift to deserve a little more attention drawn to it. So I recommend ISS highly. You should see it in a theater if you can, or at least in a big entertainment screen, good sound setting. Phenomenal cast, really interesting director. I think really, really well directed. The plotting is and the twists and all that is the least of it. To me, it's more about the emotions of the characters, the great visuals, the kind of just cosmic terror of being alone floating above Earth going 18,000 miles per hour, circling the planet and seeing the planet destroy itself from afar and not being able to do anything about it while you're destroying each other. Is it interesting enough of a mix to make this a really, really fun and interesting little gem? And it's got a couple really gnarly kills. Well, really one. The other isn't so much, but it's got one spectacular one. All right, that's ISS. I am not going to be able, I imagine, talk to many people about this on a page called Horror Weekly. And I'm dying to talk about this movie with someone. So if you end up seeing it after hearing this episode and have any thoughts about it, drop them. I most likely see them in the subscriber group. If you can join, it's $2.99 a month. The link will be in the show notes. It helps support and grow this podcast and support the community in general, which is a pretty time consuming endeavor due to its size and age, but it's deeply appreciated, and you can leave at literally any time. You don't even have to cancel anything. Just depart the Facebook group and the charge ends. Come stay, hang out for a bit, see if you like it. And then if you don't like the community or the experience, then you're gone. But I check that multiple times a day. So if you drop any thoughts about this there, I'm most likely to see it. You can also message the Horror Weekly page, which gets like 100 messages a day. So I may or may not see it there. Hopefully I will. I do my best. Or even drop it in the comments of one of the posts. I do spend a decent amount of time there. But I'm dying to know what someone else who sees this in a theater thinks of it. Now, as for group versus group horror, this became really fascinating to me. I was thinking about slashers first, and there's so few slashers that actually have this dynamic, right? Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the first one that jumped to mind with the Sawyer family versus like all their various victims that are usually clumped up in some kind of semi-cohesive group of people. Even though they don't really function truly as a group the way like a trained group that works together like an ISS would. But they kind of end up cohering as a group. But, you know, obviously, if you're going up against Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger or Jason Voorhees, it's 1v, you know, a bunch, right? I was thinking about military horror, like I said, and then it immediately became apparent to me, which I don't think I ever realized, that military horror is a really weak subgenre. Not that there aren't good movies in there are a few, but there's no masterpieces that I can think of, unless I'm massively missing something. Even like, you know, Christmas horror has Black Christmas and Krampus, for God's sakes. Cosmic horror has Event Horizon and In the Mouth of Madness and Annihilation, Under the Skin. Even the much loathed found footage genre has Blair Witch Project. I don't care what anyone says, I think the movie's great. It's got Host, it's got Lake Mungo, it's got Wreck. But military horror has like The Keep, which is just a really, really flawed film. Matter of fact, if any film deserves a really solid remake, it's probably The Keep, because that's just a spectacular book. It's got Dead Snow and Overlord, and I don't know, Overlord's fun and all, and it does have group versus group, I suppose. Although there's basically one, you know, extraordinary villain in that. I mean, extraordinary, like great performance or like whatever, but just like extraordinary compared to the other people that he's fighting. But then it occurred to me that one of the greatest group versus group horror movies ever made, and I promised this when we were talking about The Descent, is Neil Marshall's Dog Soldiers. Holy hell. A movie that literally was called Soldiers versus Werewolves in its first incarnation. A movie that Neil Marshall took, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years to make, worked on like extensively, got cast, then actors dropped out, then other actors came in, then dropped out, then came back in again. Just the fact that he did all the effects in camera, that he nailed the werewolf designs, that he paid off on the premise, the down and dirty premise of I'm making a soldiers versus werewolves movie. Kevin McKidd, who is spectacular in this, I loved him in HBO's series Rome. And it's true group versus group. It's not like, I mean, you could make anything group versus group if you want to be fuzzy with the details. You can make the movie Get Out like it's the TSA guy and his buddy, you know, are on one side and against the racist, like whatever. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking like a group that works together like a team, like a cohesive unit. And that's what you get in this one. And the werewolf side, they're a family, for God's sakes. This is just a true epic horror clash and has to be at the top, near the top, at least, of any group versus group kind of horror movie list. In the subscriber group, I got so many great suggestions. My favorite one, so there were quite a few suggestions that were my favorites. And the problem here, and maybe the community is just, it's too cohesive. Maybe like attracts like, because the suggestions I got were amazing, but they were all movies that I've talked about so much on this podcast already, or almost all. So, for example, 30 Days of Night, excellent example of group versus group, a true group, because the people who live in a town that extreme, they've all gotten to know each other. They all know each other's strengths and weaknesses. They come into a group pretty naturally, even though there is some fraying at the edges. You know, one of them loses their minds and sort of like accidentally betrays the group, etc. So it's not like, but it really does feel like team of vampires versus team of humans. Dawn of the Dead's another one I really liked as a suggestion, although I don't think of zombies as a group. I do think of them as a mass. But and they are like, I don't know, they're not really working together. They're all working for individual purposes. Well, I mean, in Land of the Dead, they are, which is one of the reasons I really love that underrated Romero dark masterpiece. Yeah, I mean, I guess, right? Like, you got to put it in group versus group. It just doesn't exactly have the feel I was looking for. Geoff Walker suggested Jordan Peele's Us. One of my very favorite horror movies. I know, don't get mad if you hate it. Like, I know it's a divisive movie. I love it. But the tethered versus the untethered, I really like that suggestion. I didn't really think of the movie in that sense, but it's totally what it is. The single best suggestion, though, and a movie that I feel like I've talked about on this podcast. If I haven't, I'm remiss because it's a masterpiece, but I'm sure I have because I think about it all the time, is Green Room. Punks versus Nazis. That is the closest analogy to ISS and an unfair comparison because Green Room is one of the very best movies of the last 20 years. Not many movies could stand to be compared with it, but it is precisely what I was looking for when I was thinking about what other group versus group. Now that I saw ISS, and I'm looking for more of that kind of feel, not the space feel, but the group versus another group kind of like, you know, clash. Green Room is they're a band. They are like bonded to each other like motherfuckers. They're working against Nazis who are being generaled by Patrick Stewart's, you know, villainous character. So they're truly like working like a coordinated machine to get into that room and get the punks out and get them murdered and get them vanished. Antonia said Children of the Corn, and R.C. Martin said Underworld, vampires versus lichens versus humans. We got group versus group versus group going on. Underworld really does feel like a series of clashes. Feels like what that entire franchise is about. I don't feel like The Thing is group versus group, really, right? It's group versus the things. I guess if they proliferate, you could say whatever. I don't know. That doesn't really have that vibe to me. Let me throw in a couple of my favorite, or the ones I would put at the top of the list of the fake genre I'm making up here, subgenre of a group versus group horror movies. The first one that came to mind, interestingly, was Cabin in the Woods. Because it's the kids versus the apocalypse bureaucracy. Right, they're really working against a group, but I like that they don't know they're in a clash with a group. And I know that, you know, they said it's the, you know, the redneck zombie murder family, whatever. But that's not who they're really against. They're really against the hilarious tandem of Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford, and then that entire kind of bureaucracy with its own, like, you know, head, Sigourney Weaver, and security team and protocols. And it really, they really do get outsmarted, sadly, for the entire world by this group of I think they're teens. I'm not sure how old they are. But what I particularly like here is they use the evil group, if they're evil. I mean, they're Bradley Whitford is going to argue that they're saving the world year after year. But they're using the evil group's asset against them, their own monsters, their own nightmare creatures. And that's when I started to realize that really does happen a lot in group versus group movies, where you use the other group's strength against it. This is why Josh Hartnett becomes a vampire to fight the vampires in 30 Days of Night. And then I just got to mention the endlessly watchable Mars Attacks, where you've got the Martians against little subgroups, little kernels of groups. And one of the things I like about group versus group dynamic in movies is the best group usually rises to the top. And hilariously, in this movie, the entire American government gets mowed down. All kinds of people fail trying to stand up to the Martians. Jack Black dies in the most ridiculous way possible. But at the end, when you've got the little celebration of figuring out who did it, it's like the one really sweet teenager, Natalie Portman, the grandma with her like incredible song that she listens to that dispatches the Martians. This is the group that's supposed to like restart the humanity. And out of all the end of the world movies, that's the group I trust the most to do a good job of it. Maybe give us a chance to restart in like a better way and not a Doctor Strangelove, just make the same mistakes over again kind of way. So I think I'm going to go rewatch Mars Attacks and Dog Soldiers and Green Room. It's going to be a hell of a triple bill. If there are group versus group horror movie suggestions that you want to make to me, you can drop them in the places I mentioned a little earlier in the podcast. I will include the link to the Friends of Horror Weekly group in the show notes. That's it. Thanks to everyone who was commenting on the page, making the discussion go from before. Thanks to everyone in the subscriber group who helped me think through this this topic. We'll be back to polling the larger community about a horror issue on next week's episode. So I'm looking forward to that. Until next Wednesday, have a great horror week.